breaking news as it happens. You're listening to Kevin McCullough Radio.
So glad to have you on this St. Patrick's Day. And it's also, I guess, St. Joseph's Day. Very, very conflicting European entities here. Got the Irish and the Italians. Anyway, Mr. McCullough, now welcoming Jim Catarfano to the microphone. And, Jim, we always appreciate getting to talk with you. Jim heads up the National Security and Foreign Policy section of the Heritage Foundation. And you just authored a piece that appeared in The Washington Times about something I had not heard anything about. What is the Massachusetts Mapping Project?
Yeah, so this is an interesting case study in First Amendment rights. So this is a project that purports to be a bunch of individual citizens banding together to alert people in their region about who's out there and what they're doing, and identifying places where they promote colonialism and imperialism and, you know, threats to democracy and everything else, and so you read that. And what it actually is really a target list for people who are anti-Semitic, and including names, addresses of including U.S. government agencies of things that you should deem evil. Now, I mean, it is not an explicit call to violence to attack these places. But it is everything up to and short of that. And the descriptions are written in the most inflammatory language. So, okay. And the way they did this is they did data mining, right? I mean, literally, they just commercially, you go, you get the data, you get addresses and everything else. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. That's perfectly legal or appropriate First Amendment stuff. Here's where it gets a little dicey. One is, for people who think that anti-Semitism is a bad thing and that Jew hating is not necessarily something that's healthy, you might have some concerns about that. But then where it gets really interesting is like, well, who are these people? Because when you go to the website, you read the report and everything, it gets kind of fuzzy about who these people actually are, what these groups are and everything. So somebody did to them what they did to U.S. government agencies and synagogues and places like that is they did some data mining. And what you discover is that it's not really clear who these band of brave citizens are, but what is suggested and is possible is this is where does the money come from and who's behind this? And an analysis, not done by me, but done by some other people, suggests, well, maybe this is foreign money and likely Iranian money. And so this is probably what this is an attempt of foreign influence to actually promote radical extremism, Jew hatred, and even attacking facilities here in the United States. So I think it's a great case study in the First Amendment, which is, you know, people can say wacky, stupid things if they want, but other people can also look at the wacky, stupid things that are being said and start to ask questions about, well, who's really behind this? And so I just think it's the kind of thing that, you know, we need a lot more of scrutiny, because part of this is, you know, there is transparency. You have the right to say whatever you want, but who are you? Why are you saying it? Where's the money coming from? And who's behind this? You know, and if people want a case study to show how this kind of gets out of control, look at these rogue prosecutors. So where we have these incredibly radical prosecutors getting elected to government, all over the United States, and it turns out it's not local citizens banding together saying, oh, we need more liberal prosecutors. It's actually money centrally coming from the Open Source Foundation or George Soros and other,
yeah,
pushing a political agenda to get people elected. Now, not illegal, I get that, but people should know that so they know, you know, what they're buying.
Yeah, it's always good to kick the tires, so to speak. And you actually write in your piece that when it was launched last June, I think you kind of glossed over this at the beginning of your comments, that this project actually formally called to dismantle dozens of Jewish organizations, including synagogues, schools, homes for people with disabilities, and that, as you said, the anonymous website purports to be run by, you know, young anti-Israel activists from the Boston area, but the Zacher Legal Institute suggests that it's up to 20 international coalition of 20 organizations that are behind it. with what we've had in the United States, particularly with the boycott, divest, and whatever the other thing is, mm-hmm. With the attacks on the synagogues, with all the other demonstrations of anti-Semitism that we have seen, where have the public leaders been in speaking out and speaking up on behalf of American Jewish people?
Well, you know, it's actually quite conflicted in the U.S. I mean, for one thing, I think a lot of Americans just don't see anti-Semitism in the United States as a problem. I think it's something that's, you know, dead for decades. But there's kind of two things which have, in many ways, led to a resurgence of anti-Semitism in the United States. One is kind of the changing nature of the American Jewish population, which is shrinking, becoming more secular, and in many ways becoming much more liberal, and is much more susceptible to arguments about being anti-Israel than before. So the people, the canaries in the mine shaft who would raise the red flag on this, often not only not raising red flags, but actually wind up supporting groups and organizations that are promoting this kind of thing. The second is, I think, is an intense onslaught by foreign sources, particularly Iran and other places, which really kind of foment this in the United States and promote this radicalism. You know, and the third thing is you know, a general kind of increasing lackadaisicalness in the United States to the importance of fundamental human rights like religious liberty.
Yeah.
And who, you know, the willingness to subjugate liberty for political agendas. And you add all that up, and we've seen this kind of creeping, and not just in the United States, we see it in Western Europe and other places as well. It's so symptomatic as when the religious liberties of one group become unimportant, you know, eventually that becomes true for all of us.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I've been telling my evangelical brethren this for a while, but the problem is that there's, in some circles, particularly center and center left, a just growing apathy towards faith at all.
Exactly.
And so unless you're, you know, and the devout seem to be smaller in number in each of the major faiths. So it's one of those things where you're, you know, even the number of people that are interested in the subject aren't nearly as many as used to be.
Right. If I don't care about religion, why would I care about religious liberty?
Right.
That is a not just a slippery slope. That's a cliff that people thought of. I mean, the freedom of expression, freedom of religion, these are fundamental rights that protect the nature of free society. And when we start to compromise on them,
we are compromising on more than just the religious liberty. I mean, the speech issue. When we're starting to say that you cannot call someone a pronoun that's other than what they have in their head about who they are,
right,
that you have to ignore their biological scientific sex to call them something other than what is fact. I mean, Jim, we're at a point where we're denying reality now, and we're insisting that everybody else around us does it, and that chokes speech, that infringes on religious liberty, or at least worldview, and yeah, it's not a slippery slope, it's a cliff. Well, good analogy.
The Boston Mapping Project, it feeds exactly into that pathology.
Yeah. Well, thanks for exposing it, and come back when you have more info, and we'll keep following it here. Appreciate you being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Jim Carafano, the great Jim Carafano at the Heritage Foundation, and as written in the Washington Times. Kevin McCullough, Bethany Mandel, next.